Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. So, budget 2024. It's going to be tabled in just a few days, and we're awaiting some of the announcements, maybe key announcements that is going to be made by the Prime Minister in the August House of the Dewan Rakyat. But for now, we need to also explore some of the salient points of what to expect from this particular budget. Joining us in the studio is Soh Lian Seng, the head of tax at KPMG. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the developments that you see. I think for now we can safely assume GST is not going to be on the books, or do you have a different opinion on this?
Well, this is always a mystery. You know? We will only know until 13 October whether GST is going to be out. But obviously, if you look for some businesses and all that, some parties are actually expecting it to be announced in terms of that. And of course, I suppose the government is now trying to strike a balance in terms of whether to introduce a GST in the light of the current economic situation. And I still remember what the PM said during the recent national tax conference. Mm-hmm. When you talk about Malaysia tax policy, two fundamental that is important to be observed. Number one, we only need to pay the necessary taxes. Number two, it should not be burdened to the rakyat. So if you go by this spirit, for example, then on the basis that if our economy, global economy is still a burden to the rakyat and all that, then perhaps this may not be announced or may not be implemented this 2024.
Speaking of which, burden to the rakyat, T20, T5 and T1 is still a burden pay 1 or 2 or even 3 percentage points more than what is necessary. My tax bracket has always been on the top end, and I hate to see my tax bracket grow even further. This is of course an idea where you're still taxing against labour instead of capital, which is what I'm trying to shift my focus on. CGT, or capital gains tax, is there. We're looking at capital investments, private equity even. Maybe you can walk through with us in terms of what the government is up to when it comes to taxing people that are using capital on wealth.
Okay. When you talk about the CGT, obviously this point has been announced in the recent retable budget. And Malaysia have been a long time. We don't have a CGT as compared to other countries. In fact, that is the key point where most investors maybe look out for Malaysia as a place of investment in terms of that. But of course, on another hand, if you look at what the PM announced in the retable budget, they're talking about in line with the international best practice according to the OECD. That is where this concept of CGT comes in. On one hand, is to increase the revenue for the government as well. But I think what is key when we talk about this CGT, for example, that I mentioned in the announcement, my point of view, they were talking about this should be imposed on companies, giving one example. So therefore, the acceptance from the public become important.
So companies, what do you mean? Like private equity companies?
No, companies. Generally, those that fall under company will fall under here.
Obviously, any number had basically.
Yes. Obviously, when you talk about the private equity will fall under at the moment.
Not individual.
Not individual, not others and all that. But I think most of the wish list from the ground is that let's limit it to the companies.
What about like family offices or something along those, like straddle between the two realms?
Well, if it's fall under the definition of company, you definitely fall under that. That is where the implication, you know, with the implementation of this CGT would definitely have impact on this group of the company.
What is the quantum that we're looking at? Is it a lot?
Well, I don't have the data.
Yeah, but like GST, we're looking at 44 billion, for instance.
Sure,
so SST 30 plus billion.
Sure,
is it somewhere along those lines?
In my view, I don't have the data, but in my view, it may not. But it depends on how wide is the coverage. You know, because if you look at the announcement in the retable budget, obviously, the only exemption they are looking at is only for those companies who do restructuring, because of IPOs. But we know very well that companies, sometimes they do restructuring, it's not because of IPO, it's for business efficiency and all that. So that group, if that can be extended, the exemption to cover that, then that would be good. But obviously, to answer your question, if that doesn't cover that, then the quantum can be huge in terms of that. So on that score, for non-corporate entity with a different intention, like the private equity, wealth management and all that, in my view, it should be excluded for the purpose of this.
Let's talk about non-residential companies that are domiciled elsewhere. Mm. How do you think they are going to be impacted if they do a direct investment here in this country? Also, where do you feel the allure of us trying to get further investments from investors outside if we have all these new tax structures and regimes in place?
To me, tax is just one aspect. There are many other considerations for investors to consider. Mm. From my point of view, if you look at Malaysia, I think there are many other good things as well. So it all depends on the investors' wish list and what is they up to. Mm. But of course, if you're looking from the purely tax angle, then for a company, then definitely they will look at and compare to the intended investing countries that they want to do. Mm. So from that score, if you look at our corporate tax rate, for that example, those with strategic business angle, those group of company may be given certain type of tax incentive. So with that tax incentive they're being given, yes, Malaysia can be one of the good destination from that aspect. To answer your question, on the basis where if there are new taxes coming in, okay, it depends on what type of new taxes. CGT, perhaps it may be one, right? But however, if you look at the countries over the world, there are many countries also having CGT. So to me, maybe...
It's not new.
It's not new.
Out of the blue.
That's right. But even if you talk about the global minimum tax, for example, for the M&E, well, every other country who participate there will also be affected in terms of that. The question is, if you need to, for those existing investors that are already in Malaysia, the question is, if you need to relocate, for example, it may take more cost to relocate. So most of the time, under that circumstances, I would then advise my client, let's engage with our authority. If you are currently having incentive, for example, and for you to remain here, let's have the open engagement. Because when you talk about this GMT and all that, there may be other factors that our government can actually consider, you know, for you to continue investing here.
It's not about GMT, global minimum tax that is currently being thought of being implemented in 2024, maybe 25.
Well, that is a very good question. In fact, I think most companies or businesses are talking about that.
We've been talking about it for quite some time.
I think from the ground, businesses, they are hoping that this can be deferred to 2025. From the government's perspective,
oh my God,
because of this 15% that most, I wouldn't say all, most M&E may be to a certain extent enjoying certain type of incentive,
yeah,
then that top-up tax will be there.
Yeah.
So if you don't so-called implement this QMDTTU fast enough, maybe one may view that you may be losing the revenue there. But I think what is important is how to strike a balance. At the moment, I think what is clear, perhaps two countries that have talked that they were going to implement in 2024, South Korea and Japan. But when we talk compared to other countries within this region, even Singapore, for example, they're looking at 2025. So this is actually a key point, an interesting key point that we got to wait in this coming budget, whether our government really want to proceed with 2024 or consider 2025. But I think my view here is, while you can consider 2024, but let's be open. Maybe there are certain industries, certain type of businesses may require more time. Let's be open and not so rigid. Maybe consideration can be given during this transition period.
But the thing is, if you talk about the ill-preparedness of corporates in terms of trying to be compliant with new tax regimes, it's a chicken and egg argument. They will never be ready until the law is mandated upon them. Even for GST, now there's talks. I don't know. I mean, these are just rumors, lah. It's no longer customs is going to do it. It's going to be MOF. This is what I heard. I don't know if you hear differently. But whatever it is, if it's not, if you don't put a start date for these kind of things, a hard start date, people are just going to, you know, put it on a wallpaper somewhere, on a board somewhere in the office, and not dedicate time, effort, resources, people, whatever, to get it done. So do you feel that the need for the government to do, I wouldn't say drastic measures, but announcements that are key has to be done in this budget, and a start date that is as clear as day? Do you think that is the motion right now?
Yeah, I think in terms of that, I would agree with you that I think practically businesses, certainty is very important. In fact, if you look at the recent retable of budget, when you talk about the capital gains tax, luxury tax, there has been made an announcement, right? So if you look at from that angle, in fact, the government is actually announcing early. But of course, implementation, the mechanism, how to implement, comes
the
later. The
yeah.
details come later. So if talking about GST, in fact, GST, the concept is not new.
It's not.
To me, I think businesses, those already existed for many years and have already implemented, they should be familiar with that.
No, it's not about that. It's about the political cost of implementing GST, something that both you and I are not going to be equipped to address. Because this is the question of public acceptance, of policy acceptance, and many more, of popularity.
Sure. Sure.
Have you factored that in KPMG? What's the house view in terms of the political cost of this?
Well, if you look at it purely from the government's perspective, well, tax reform is important. Obviously, they have a choice how they want to implement that. Of course, if you look at currently over 170 countries already implemented GST. To say that
over 170
countries. So to say that this is not a good tax platform, I think it's difficult to dispute. Obviously, every type of taxer will have their pro and con, but I think it's a matter of how do you managing and balancing it up, right? So if you compare that, if other country over 170 have implemented that, and to a certain extent already assisted the country, I suppose that consumption tax regime is not too bad. And in fact, if you look at that concept, my view is it go in line perhaps with the Madani economy framework. In terms of that, maybe the issue here is the effectiveness of the implementation.
Yeah.
So
also the efficiency of tax refund.
Efficiency of tax refund. So perhaps that part can be re-look at it and improve in a good version, perhaps, since we already have that past experience. So now we can actually address some of this targeted area to have an improved version. I don't know. That's my view.
Let's take a view away from consumption tax, and now let's take a look into wealth tax, inheritance tax, specifically inheritance. Actually, I want to explore that. We've had it up until 1992, if I'm not mistaken, or 91, something
91,
like that.
91, yeah.
And then we have 5%, am I right? 5% of taxation, of the top bracket is 40-50% somewhere in Japan or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so are we going to see the re-emergence of inheritance tax?
It's a very good question. I don't have an answer for that, you know, but of course, again,
Let's take a look this way. Let me rephrase my question. Do you think we should have an inheritance tax?
Okay. If I come from the angle of exploring new taxes, then obviously this is one of the new taxes that can be considered. Next question would be, with this implementation, how does it actually contribute in terms of the tax collection? Would that contribute a lot in terms of that? But if you were to understand the concept of this inheritance tax, basically it's actually tax on one generation to another. And if you look at it, is perhaps I may say a tax on inflation perspective. Question is, if you reflect back in terms of numbers, which I don't have at the moment, how does it material enough? Maybe at the moment, without numbers, my outright view is it may not be material, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah.
So the question here is, if we are going on the spirit of taxing the T20, right? Maybe this is one aspect that the expectation from the government? Maybe, the way how I see. So to answer that, well, if the government have the intention to expand their base, obviously this is one. Question is it the right timing in terms of the concept of burdening the rakyat? If from that concept, then it may not be the right timing. Or sometimes new taxes, there's never be a good timing as well. So it has to be a political view to see that whether this is the right base to expand.
What about wealth tax?
I don't have much information about the wealth tax, but I will go according to the same concept in terms of this inheritance tax, going by way of what do we want our rakyat to pay? Mm-hmm. Is this something that's going to burden me? If answer is yes, then I will say then it go against that principle, right? So the other part is that whether from this platform, are we going to get more taxes, but by taxing it, you are restricting or discouraging people from investing in Malaysia. So they must have a strike a balance between the two.
Okay, let's take a look into the whole budget 2024 per se. Budget 2023 and the previous budgets before this, it's always on the issue of how well has the government disbursed the allocated funds. Some sort of tracking mechanism has to be there. Right now, we're unclear, or maybe it wasn't made public that loud and clear in terms of how much money needs to be disbursed. This is in terms of the disbursement collection we've been talking a bit. But on the disbursement side, what would be your wish list in terms of trying to see where the money goes? Is it is it towards more development funds, more OPEX? How do you view this?
Yeah, I think every year when it comes to budget, I think if you look at the economy report, there's some kind of percentage in terms of how they spend on the development account and also the OPEX account. I agree with you. I think transparency is very important in terms of that. Maybe that area can be perhaps relook at it, can be done better in terms of that. And when we look at the as a whole, as a country as a whole, what is important is what would be our first priority. So if our priority in this case is to beef up our economy situation, then to me, focus should then be focused on development. But again, with the development, again, what should be the priority? That would be my view. OPEX, I think, is something that we also need that to run the country in terms of that. Question is, how do we have a proper processes, control to minimize leakages? Maybe that sort of action or effort is important in terms of that, yeah.
And finally, one area of concern is on the budget wish list per se. What do you want to be seen inside this budget?
Right. To me, the first one, I think all of us are talking about rising of costs. So that is very important. Obviously, I wish to see whether this budget, they can give some kind of, I wouldn't say incentive, but consideration for individual, perhaps at the M40, to have more disposable income. So that may help in terms of the rising of costs. But again, looking at the last retable budget, where they just reduced a certain point in terms of tax rate, so whether they're going to continue to introduce further reduction, perhaps it's unlikely. Maybe instead of looking at the reduction of rate, maybe one consideration wish list that I'm looking at is we have perhaps 20 relief or deductions in Malaysia.
Okay.
Right? 20.
I didn't realize it was
So 20. So question is there a way to simplify it or combine some of this relief? Because my view here is if that's so, it make the process simplified. It actually benefit both taxpayer and the authority, right? 20, imagine if I claim all the 20 and if I'm being selected for review, how many documents that I need to review or rather the authority need to review? Maybe this is one consideration. Simplify it, you know? The second point I look at it is businesses. If you look at Malaysia, I suppose most of our businesses are all in the SME categories.
Yeah, 90 plus percent.
Now, what do they need? You know, what do they need? What do they need to actually improve their business? And nowadays we talk about cash flow, for example. So of course, I take one example, say for example, in the manufacturing, in the SME category, all this while we have an incentive like reinvestment allowance. That allowance is going to end soon.
Yeah.
So question here is, if this continue to give benefit to businesses, why can't we continue with that incentive? That's one. Second, now we are promoting digitalization, right? So SMEs, are they there? So question here is, how do we then help using tax tools to help them to be at that level? When you talk about digitalization, very important is IT costs, number one. Number two, upskilling of the staff. So to encourage them, perhaps government can consider that, number one, those who let the staff have this upskilling skill can get a double deduction on the training, perhaps, number one. Number two, when we talk about investment in IT, then...
Infra
IT, for example, those that can qualify for capital allowances.
Yeah.
Maybe accelerate the capital allowances for extended period of time.
I would like that. I'm running a small business. I would like that.
Exactly. So to me, I think these are the fundamental and the key point that important for us to help SMEs in their businesses.
Yeah, because it allows for greater cash flow management, which is the main point of an SME. Yeah. Final question is on this, Lian Seng. Do you think that this government has what it takes to present a budget that is going to be beneficial for businesses and people? Are you looking at this government being a little bit more populist in this budget or a little bit more structuralist? I don't know what's the opposite of populist, but structuralist, I guess.
Interesting question.
Yeah, the tough one. the tough one really for last.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that last question. Now, if I were to look at the last 1-2 budgets and all that, again, allow
me... This is going to be an examination on the PM.
Yeah.
The February one, I don't count.
Sure.
Yeah.
But when I look at it, I think very important, I got to re-look at the fundamental policy. You know, what the PM is driving it. Like I mentioned earlier, PM is talking about every riot to pay the necessary tax, not burden them. But if I flip a bit to look at what is the performance that, say, example, our HASIL has been doing. If you look at, I think there's some quote given by the CEO, the collection has improved 20%. So if you look
with the
at
voluntary
that,
disclosure as well.
That's one, that's right. And the e-invoicing thing, they're coming in. But if you look at the tax collection that has improved, is that means that the approach that they've taken is on the right direction? And I think in the quote they mentioned, if this continue to improve, they can even exceed the anticipated budget of 179.1 billion. Right? So question now here is, while we can consider all the different new base of taxes, I think the initiative currently they are doing, for example, like HASIL under the AES, Awareness, Education and System, does work. It gives a different perspective to taxpayer. It does build certain trust in the taxpayer. That's how you see the improvement in tax collection. But I think what is important, while we are talking about new bases, but we, just like you mentioned about SBDP, Special Volunteer.
Mm.
Actually, what's the purpose?
Voluntary disclosure purpose.
Yeah, actually, what's the purpose?
To get them into the system, right?
Exactly. So question is, how big is that shadow economy? I remember 2019, they were talking about some figure about 300 billion or something.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, so question is...
And here we are, you know, clamoring about GST,
exactly,
40 plus billion.
Exactly, exactly.
But the hell, 300 billion
300 billion,
there.
Exactly. So to me is that, in fact, that is a good platform to focus, and that itself, in the interim, you can actually collect more taxes, and that definitely will help the government to manage their fiscal debt. But I do agree, responsible utilization of taxes also important.
That is paramount.
That's right.
I mean, I got a brother in-law, he's Swedish, you know, 49% effective tax rate. income.
Yep.
He couldn't care less. Mm. That's why he stays there. And he's like, I mean, I can pay 24-25% in Malaysia, but I don't want to stay here. Mm. So how you spend the money is much more important than how you take it.
Thought this one was final.
No, this one, the short one. Isn't it easier if they give us a tax bill and then we sign off on it instead of us filling it up?
Talking about that, in fact, you look at our tax system, it's actually evolved. When I first joined this field, I call it a tax 1.0. That is called under the official assessment system. This is where perhaps your concept that comes in, whereby they will issue the return, I sign it off, I submit,
settle,
then it's up to the authority to come back and say, do you have this document, do you have that document?
Yeah.
Then we move on to tax 2.0, which is in 1999, 2000, where the self-assessment comes in. This is the part that you mentioned, I feel
with the 20 plus relief.
With the 20 plus relief and all that. So if you look at it now, we are now coming into tax 3.0, in fact, with the e-invoicing implementation.
Yes,
you know, we are going into a real time, you know.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I think, maybe that is not for me to answer, but I believe with the new effort that HACCP is going to do, I think they are moving towards that, improving the compliance, you know, improving the compliance methodology.
And I don't want to think about taxes also. Yeah. If it's real-time, I can...
Exactly. And if we look at how...
tap the shadow economy once and for all.
Exactly. If you look at the concept of the e-invoicing implementation, just imagine now, for example, once it's really implemented next year for the large company, everything will be, the information will be then captured in the HACCP's data, right? So when come to year end, don't you think those information can actually form the first draft of how much tax you're supposed to pay? That is real time, you know, Ibrahim?
Yeah.
We are moving towards that, the way how I see.
In fact, you don't have to wait. If it's real time, I can just periodically check what is my tax liability.
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Soe Lian Seng, Head of Tax, KPMG. You want to learn more? Follow KPMG's report on the budget, post-budget report. You can also look for these kind of resources on astrowning.com. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.